What would you like me to talk about today? Last time, we talked about unconditional love.
What is the difference between the stopping desires with the control of the senses? Is there any difference?
The difference between stopping desire and control of the senses. Well, that's a very interesting question. And that's certainly something to talk about. Now, desire is a function of the soul. Desire is something that is an integral and essential part of our being. It is actually the manifestation of our being. So desire in and of itself is not necessarily bad. Now, the problem is when we try to understand desire in terms of what is good for us. Because sometimes the way we relate in this world becomes complicated by our desires. The problem comes when we have a conflict of interests. The conflict comes when something that is desired of us by others, or desired by us because of our conditioning, conflicts with our basic spiritual needs. Now, it is actually wrong to speak of spirit and needs in the same sentence. In the same sentence. Because the spirit has no need. Yet, the spirit has an entanglement in this world which causes it to require certain nourishment. Now, we were talking about needs. If you were to define the word need, it means something you do not have. Now, spirit is self-sufficient. It really has everything. So it really doesn't have any needs. However, the spirit is now residing within this material energy. Now, how does spirit and matter relate? Because if you remember, the topic we're speaking about is the difference between stopping desire and controlling the senses. Now, this question actually is integrated into the concept of spirit and matter, because it is only within the realm of spirit and matter that we have to worry about desires and control of the senses. This is because we feel that we are spirit captured within the material world and we want to get out of it. Now, that is a reasonable way to think. It is not a wrong concept, it's a reasonable concept. But it might not be the best way to think to accomplish the purpose we wish to accomplish. But I will get to that in a second. Right now, let's examine this question from the point of view that the question was asked. And then afterwards, we will get to the, let's say, alternative way of answering the question by seeing the problem in a different way. Now, if you see yourself as bound by matter or encased by illusion, that is a pretty dismal situation. Dismal, it means a very bad, not a very good situation. Because if you think about it, it's like being in a prison. And who wants to be in a prison? And further, how do you get out of prison? When we think of prisons, when we think of jails, when we think of being captured, it's usually a hopeless situation. I can't do anything about it. I'm stuck here. And even if somebody starts telling us how to get out of the prison, that doesn't necessarily mean we will. In other words, it's a very discouraging situation. So to deal with this discouraging situation, we have to take up some kind of a process, which is guaranteed, in quotes, to bring us to a place where we are no longer imprisoned. Now, I don't want to discuss whether or not that guarantee can be trusted, because that's not really the point. Because it's very difficult to know if you can actually get that guarantee fulfilled or not. So one has to basically take it on faith. Now, faith is something which is based on experience. And experience is something which is based on factual realization and intensity of the present moment. Now, having such experiences is difficult and it's also rare, because we are battling in prison against the whole material energy as we have defined it. This makes the battle very difficult, very tough, very problematic. So concepts such as stop desire, shut down desire, reduce desire seem to be a solution. But everybody knows that this is a losing battle. It's like saying water should not be wet. Now you can say that. You can try to make water not wet. You can try. You can do it by cooking it so the steam comes up and all of the liquid disappears and it becomes a gas. But the problem is that the water has simply gone up into water vapor and it's still there, but now it's in the air. And if you had some piece of metal or wood or anything above where you boiled the water, it would be wet with humidity. So even though we thought we boiled away the water, what we really did was just put it somewhere else. Now, of course, you can divide up water into hydrogen and oxygen because that's the chemical constituent of water. Now, that is a very energy-demanding process. And then you've got something which is even more dangerous. Pure oxygen, pure hydrogen, they can explode into flame and fire immediately. They're very unstable in that way. So by thinking to solve one problem, actually it made a bigger problem. I think this suggests that trying to stop, finish, boil off all desires is not necessarily the way to go. Because, of course, we are made of, we are totally desire. That is what consciousness is. Consciousness permeates things. It understands, it sees, it perceives. That is its desire. And spirit wishes to meet with spirit in relationships. So, again, the whole realm of spirit is filled with desire. So by trying to avoid it, we are trying to avoid our essence. So by avoiding all desire, or negating all desire, we are negating our very selves. We are negating our very existence. That doesn't sound like a very good thing to do. In fact, it sounds like a very destructive thing to do. Now, how does one deal with that situation? Then comes the concept of control of the senses. Now that is also a difficult thing to do. Let's break this concept down into its two parts. You've got the soul, the spirit, the energy filled with desires. You've got matter, which is all filled with things which we have to avoid. And the most important part of that matter for us is this body. Now, what is this body? Well, it's the cells, of course, of the body. It's the perceptions which come into the body and which cause our consciousness to relate and react in different ways. And it's our emotions. It's the way our energy reaches out to others and becomes affected by others. It's our mental capacity and the way we think and see and analyze and rationalize. It's a complicated situation. And all of these elements of what we call our bodies are not always working in the same way. In the ideal situation, our bodies, our minds, our hearts, our energies, our cells, our remembrances, everything works in harmony. But how often is this ideal situation actually present? I suppose if you would interview everybody on the planet, you would find that such harmony is very rare. In fact, I would even be so bold as to say that where such harmony exists, you will have extremely old people, totally healthy, totally happy. That is very rare. Basically, we find people who are stressed, people with anxiety, people with disease, people getting old before their time. In other words, you get a lot of problems. Now, considering this, and of course somebody may disagree with the way I've analyzed it, but that's the way I've analyzed it. So, and since I'm giving the lecture, I have a right to do it. So, the idea that there is this conflict within us on different levels makes controlling the senses an extremely complex situation. How can a system in conflict control anything? Who's the controller? Actually, it becomes very complex. Now, the actual controller, of course, is supposed to be the spirit. Yet under this concept, the spirit is directly at war with matter. So it's a question of defeating the matter. That's what war means, and sometimes there's casualties. I don't think that making war with your body, your mind, your energies, your emotions, your heart, your memories, is a smart thing to do. And how do you defeat yourself anyway? Well, there is a way that people try to do it. They say that all of this other stuff, all of the body, mind, heart, energies, memories, everything, this is not me. This is all illusion. It's to be rejected. It factually doesn't exist. But the same persons don't have contact with what they say is the truth or the reality, which is the spirit. With the truth, what they think is the truth, what they think is the reality, which is the spirit. So what you do have contact with is the illusion. Now you've rejected that totally. What you don't have contact with is the spirit, which is what you say is the only truth. So we're in a situation where we're not in contact, really, with anything. Now that is the definition of a zombie. That's a person who has no contact with life. A person who is dead, but who has been resurrected to perform the bidding of some master somewhere else. However, this is not very satisfying. It's not fun. Now, of course, I've painted a very drastic picture of this very innocent question. Of course, it's also fun to do that sometimes. But the point which I'm trying to make is that when you place yourself in a situation of conflict against yourself, in whatever way you define that self, it's going to cause trouble. It's like giving up a sure thing for something which is very questionable. Now that is basically the concept which is used by all spiritual systems which speak about detachment, which speak about renunciation. Then, of course, there are other systems which speak about interaction with matter in order to get to the point where you overcome matter. That's another kind of a system where you just get so involved with matter that after a while you lose your taste for it. But that, again, brings up the same concept. It's based on the same concept of the exclusive difference between matter and spirit. I don't think these methods work. And if they do work in certain individuals, it's only because of the quality of those particular individuals. It's not a generally working principle. These are principles which are difficult to embrace and difficult to achieve the results you want in the way you want. Now, of course, that is contrary to everything that is generally taught. But I think that's because what is generally taught is not really a complete picture. It's a subset of a complete picture. What would be a complete picture? To accept that everything within our energy field is our energy. It means to accept ourselves and take responsibility for everything that is of our lives. To take responsibility for our bodies, for our minds. For example, not to just say, oh, my mind is a crazy thing, totally crazy machine, has nothing to do with me. Therefore, ultimately, I'm not responsible for what this mind is doing. It's just matter. It's the material energy. It's the material energy's fault, not mine. Similarly, my parents, it's all their fault, not mine, because after all, I just took birth accidentally as their child, and they screwed me up. And this body, with all of its demands, this is not me. This is just some chemicals and some biological urges and some hormones. It's not my responsibility. My only responsibility is to say no when something's going on which is not right. And what is right? Well, sometimes what I've been told, what I've been forced to think, or maybe even what I speculated but really don't believe, or actually, what is right? I think this is a rationalization, and that we have to take responsibility for our lives. We have to take responsibility for our bodies. They have to be healthy. They have to be fit physically. We have to take responsibility for our feelings and accept them and not try to ignore them. We have to accept responsibility for our minds. And when our minds are flipping out, there's a reason for it. And we have to take responsibility for that reason and do something about it. We have to take responsibility for our energy, what we let in it, and what we put out of it. And ultimately, we have to take responsibility for what we are as a being, because it's our being which is manifesting all of that which comes out in our energetic fields. So let's say we try the battlefield method, and we try to defeat ourselves and control our senses and reduce our desires. This is a tough one to do. I'm just repeating the concept of this discussion. Although the original concept was the difference between the control of senses and the negation of desire, I'm saying the actual conflict or the actual discussion is between these concepts over here and the concept which I'm bringing up now of taking responsibility for ourselves as a complete whole. I would therefore recommend that it's highly probable, it is much better to take responsibility for yourself as a complete whole than to divide yourself and do battle. You know the military concept? It's called divide and conquer. So you can see how whoever it is that has arranged this has very nicely divided up everyone and conquered them at the very core of their being. And therefore, nobody can actually win. You can just stay alive and standing until death and then start all over again. Or you can refuse to be divided. You can take responsibility for your entire being. You can take responsibility for every aspect of your existence. You can integrate all of your life. And therefore, you can understand actually how your desire actually creates your life. And in that situation where you're no longer dictated to, you start to grow enormously. You finished? Gaurav? Oh, I didn't know you finished because there was no period at the end of your sentence. So, this is a very, very empowering concept, as opposed to the other concept, which seems to me to be rather disempowering. This concept is empowering. The other concept of, you know, the getting rid of desires, and that seems to be disempowering. Are you following this idea? Am I actually answering your discussion? Is this discussion helpful? Well, that's again your choice. What you wish to do, you do. Just like it's your choice not to do it as a philosophical principle. Now, for example, if it was me, I can't speak for you, but I can speak for me. If I were to start causing violence to others, or even to animals, or I was to start, being a drunkard or whatever, it would so contradict my own energy that I would feel really lousy, because that's the way I am. Now, there may be things which wouldn't contradict my energy so much I might really like. Now, let's take the situation from the other point of view. Let's say if I really wanted to eat hamburgers, if I really wanted to drink whiskey, if I really wanted to take drugs, and I didn't, but I was really eager for this, I was really thirsting for this. Well, what really is going on? Why am I not doing it? Because somebody told me it's bad for me. Because actually, I really want to do it. So, does such a person actually evolve? Yeah. Does he grow? Evolve is another way of saying evolution. You know evolution? Okay, I'm just telling you. So, if I am, again, fighting with myself inside, is this necessarily good? Let's say I really know something is bad, and I have to fight not to do something really bad because it's in my interest not to do it. But because it's in my interest not to do it, and I know that, this is a good battle. But if I don't really understand why I shouldn't do something, and I only do it because someone else said I shouldn't do something, I would really doubt if that's something good for me. Now, that's not a small difference. That's a big difference. What I was saying was that we become old before our time because of our not being in harmony with ourselves. That this creates our early aging. Not that... That the idea would be that when you are in harmony and things are flowing properly within you, the aging process just slows down. Did you translate that right, or was that a problem in your translation before? Okay. Is your translation getting better now? You're getting used to it. Atita, you think his translation good? So, what I was trying to say was that when you have this lack of harmony within yourself, it creates these little battles, and these little battles deteriorate the body. It becomes a battlefield. You know what happens on a battlefield. There's all these bombs everywhere, and things are smashed, trees are destroyed, burning, fires, smashing. So why should you have a battlefield in yourself? It's very damaging. So there should not be this battlefield. One should take responsibility for all aspects of one's existence. And when one takes responsibility for all aspects of one's existence, one is no longer in a battlefield. One is on a construction site. You know, construction site where you build buildings? Not constructing buildings. Okay. So is it better to be on a battlefield or to be where everything's being destroyed, or being on a construction site where things are being built up and renewed? I'm changing tape.
What's wrong with having me either?
Do you still see me? Okay, I just changed the tape. That was actually a good question. It enabled me to... Do you still see the top of my head, or is it cut off? Yeah? That was a good question because it enabled me to speak about that very important point about the life, the body being a battlefield of life or a body being a construction site of life. Now, of course, in both situations, let's say you're fighting in a building or you're building a building. In both situations, you have some parts of the building still intact, but in the battlefield one, it's gradually being torn down. In the construction one, it's gradually being built up. Anything else to talk about out there? Back to that point. Well, again, it depends. You know, scientists have shown that people who live in Mediterranean countries and have a glass of wine a day, especially with meals, have less cancer and live longer and are healthier than people who don't. So, I don't know whether one would want to judge a certain thing just because it's that thing. You have to see how it's used. You know, in Bengal, they have these, I forgot what it's called, and that's really too bad, but they have these bottles of digestive aids, this liquid for digestion. It's very effective, especially if you have slightly liver problems or stomach problems. It's Ayurvedic, but it's pure wine. So, whether something is good or bad is our own personal choice that we make for us. Now, when we go to the park and we walk Suchi, our dog, sometimes we run into homeless people. You have them also there in St. Petersburg. They live on the street. And sometimes they're also quite drunk. Now, is that good or is that bad? Well, I don't think it's necessarily good. I don't like to see it. Yet they, how shall we say, try to make sense of their situation by negating it as much as possible with drinking. They try to negate their situation. They try to cover over by drinking. They try to somehow make it okay. You know that Neil Walsh, who wrote the Conversations with God, for some period of time he was also a homeless person. And during that time he said he grew more than most of the rest of his life. Is it good? Is it bad? Is it right? Is it wrong? It is. That's just the way it is. All of our labels on it being good or bad or right or wrong are our own judgments of it. Then there are people who stand around and say, that is bad. Then there are people who say, oh, that's not good for you. Let me do something to help you. Then there are those people who say, I'm going to help you like this, and you should accept what I give you. And then there are people who say, how would you like me to be of service to you? I would think there is no right or wrong in any of these situations. It's just how we choose to react to them. What was it? Well, I don't think that it's a very good technique, so to speak, to think you're going to make a direct transformation of an inanimate object into love. You can't take wine and make it love. You can't take anything and make it love. Love comes from within you. And yet some of the best healers who have given themselves totally for the sake of others, drank a lot. But you can't, for example, say, I don't have love now, so I'm going to take this bottle and I will get it. That is silly. If you choose to do something which brings you a good result, and you get that good result, even if it was a very difficult thing to do, then certainly that gives you great benefit. It's an evolutionary process. But what did you really mean by that? What did you really mean? The hidden question. Well, it depends. If these things were inappropriate for you, these things were not something that was in your interest to do, then negating, as you said, or resisting such urges are very good for you. But it all depends on whether these things actually are beneficial for you to avoid or not. For example, there's a whole school of thought as far as diet is concerned which says, eat what you really feel like eating and don't eat other things. However, if, for example, you just feel like going to Gora and eating his cakes all day, you might say, well, that's not very good, so what are you talking about? But the funny thing is that nobody in the cake factory wants to eat those cakes. So again, I bring up a point which one person from Berlin called me, a former devotee person, and he said, oh, I've got all these problems and I've done all these bad things, what should I do? And I said to him, I said, okay, you did what you thought was right when you did it. You don't think it's right now. So you're a good person. You will always do the right thing, eventually. So have faith in yourself. You will do the right thing, because you're a good person. Similarly with eating, similarly with all other activities, the same principle can be applied. Understand? Is that the right answer to that question? You know, sometimes we're in this battle, right? So we're busy fighting within ourselves. So we're just blowing holes in ourselves. And if we just know that we're a good person and we're moving through our experiences and we will be rightly situated because of our inherent goodness, we don't have to blow holes in ourselves. Again, you're using the word right if you translated it correctly. And I would not use that word. I would say it is. It is like that. We need to eat. We need wood. We need things. It's just the way the world is arranged. The question comes, how much of it do you need? At what point do your needs become exploitation of others? So I like actually very much that Isopanishad, where it says that everything has been given perfectly and completely, and one should accept things according to one's quota or one's requirement. And I think that is a regulatory mechanism in the world today. When if I do something that regulates me, what is my quota? What do I actually need? Dharmabhavita, what do you think? Well, for example, some people do things in such a way as to live according to their philosophy. For example, if they don't like to kill trees, they don't use newspapers, they don't use paper, they don't use the wood in the same way. There are vegans who don't eat any milk product because they don't want to cause trouble to cows. So if you feel very strongly about something, well, live according to that principle. The most important principle is to be true to yourself. Does that help with that? Is that answer proper? Oh, how I deal with it?
Yeah.
Okay. I don't think I overcome anything. I just kind of deal with things as they come to me, sometimes successfully and sometimes not very successfully. I find it to be a moment-by-moment experience. And sometimes I consider myself successful, and sometimes I consider myself a complete failure. And sometimes opinion of myself increases or decreases accordingly. But I have this problem of perfectionism, and I can never fulfill my own expectations. For example, I can be playing for an hour and on a musical instrument, and if I play great but I make two mistakes, I'll remember the two mistakes, not the rest of the good notes. So that's my particular mental disease. But what I'm doing is I'm trying to feel good about me in all circumstances. And generally I'm doing that fairly well nowadays. I don't think anybody has an easy time with this situation. We all have our expectations of ourselves. We all have our demands on ourselves. Sometimes these demands can assist our growth. At other times they can destroy our growth. So that brings us back to the moment. Every moment you have to make a choice. And it's within that moment, within those choices we make, that our lives are built. And if it's in the present moment we're feeling bad about what we have done in the past, that helps build our future. But don't forget one important point. Even when you think you've done something really, really wrong, it could actually be an enormous catalyst for growth. I would even go so far as to say, anyone who does everything right all the time doesn't grow at all, because they're already acting according to their capacity. What's more important is to push your limits, to grow, to make mistakes, to learn from them. Because if you don't, it's just stagnation. No growth, no life.